Cartrip Betts is dead.
Oh, is it?
Does Michael Jackson know?
Welcome to the Betts and Quotes podcast, a show for the rubes, by the rubes, talking all things Power Trip. Betts and Quotes is hosted by Chuck, better known as Power Trip Betts, and David, the one and only Power Trip Quotes. They were going to get an apartment together and see how things went, but settled on a podcast instead. This show is in no way, shape, or form sponsored by, affiliated with, or even tolerated by the Power Trip, KFAN, or iHeartMedia. In fact, we'd be willing to bet that Chad Abbott never listens to a single episode. And now, here are your hosts, Chuck and David.
Welcome to the Betts and Quotes podcast, episode number 17. I'm your co-host Chuck, otherwise known as Power Trip Betts.
And I'm Dave, Power Trip Quotes.
And on this week's show, we've got a very special interview with the one and only Paul Charchian of Fanball.com. So looking forward to talking with Charch. Meanwhile, we'll do our normal Betts update and Quotes update and get you all caught up with the goings-on of the Power Trip.
Here's this week in Power Trip Betts.
Power Trip Betts.
Power Trip Betts.
Power Trip Betts, though.
Where's Power Trip Betts when you need him?
Ask I Power bet. Trip Betts.
Is Power Trip Betts drunk?
You want to bet?
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh, I love Tommy. Since our last show, we've had a few new bets and a couple bets settle. The most interesting one that settled was the Chris versus Corey that Treadwell was going to score a TD versus the Lions. Chris got 2-1 odds on that, but unfortunately it didn't really matter because Treadwell got nothing and liked it. So that was a losing bet for Chris, and he had to pay Corey $50 on that. Were you cheering for Treadwell?
No, I was not cheering for Treadwell because I myself, with another guy that I'm in a fantasy league with, have an over-under of 3.5 touchdowns for the regular season.
Aha!
And I'm the under. So I don't need any more. One's enough.
Well, I think you might be safe on that bet. We'll see how the rest of the year plays out. But unfortunately for Chris, he took the L on that one. It was interesting, too, because PA on his show during the week, somebody asked him, you know, because he had made the prediction that he felt Treadwell was going to score. And PA said that he would have needed at least 8-1 odds to take the bet. So I guess he thought he'd score, but he wasn't confident enough to put a 2-1 up on it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's normally pretty connected and knows, the ins and outs of the Vikings. So he probably had some good intel, but did not work out.
Did not. The next bet that they did was between Chris and Meat Sauce, and that was the Cardinals plus 17 against the Chiefs. Now, the interesting thing about this bet was the negotiation of the bet, because they started out talking about a 17.5 line, and Chris said that he would need odds. And Meat Sauce was like, well, I'm not giving you odds. And so Chris said, well, how about straight up then? And of course, Meat Sauce said no on the straight up. And then Meat Sauce went back, and instead of 17.5, they went 17, and he went ahead and gave him odds of 2-1. So Chris, because the Cardinals covered, ended up collecting $100 while only risking $50 on it. And the thing that made me laugh the most was Corey's reaction when it was all done, where he said something to the effect of, I think I'm going to go on top of this building and jump off, because the negotiation was very painful to listen to.
Yeah, worst negotiation ever. I mean, the fact of the idea of the point spread is so that it would be 50-50 bet.
Right.
So giving 2-1 on and then giving 17.5 points was not Meat Sauce's best moment.
No, and then on top of it, I talked to a few different, and most people were like, yeah, I think I'd still take the Chiefs in that bet, but you know, they sputtered a little bit and weren't able to quite cover 17 on that. So Chris collected $100 on that one. The next bet was the first college basketball bet of the season. Meat Sauce took Duke and Kansas versus Chris Hockey and the entire field for $50. Very interesting bet, because clearly Duke looks like they are thoroughly unstoppable. But it's a long season. Lots of things can happen. Sauce also gets Kansas, which obviously is one of the top contenders and a favorite to make it to the Final Four as well. But two teams versus the field. What side are you on?
Well, I happen to be a very big Kansas Jayhawks basketball fan, so I like Sauce's side of the bet. You know, it's weird because Kentucky's had some really strong teams, and you know, where their top five all go in the first round of the draft lottery and everything. But I don't know. I just it's such a weird tournament, the 64 team tournament. You know, Virginia lost as a one seed last year. Really, anything can happen when it gets to single elimination. So I would hate, I mean, even having the two best teams in the nation, I still don't like that side of the bet. I would way rather have the field.
So am I going to have to like call the authorities when we're in the Planet Hollywood Sportsbook and Kansas is down 3 with like 8 seconds to go and you're ready to attack people?
Yeah, I'm probably going to run out of hair, but normally in the tournament, I tend to bet against them just so I'm kind of satisfied either way.
Right. The old hedge.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It'll be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, it'd be awesome if like something cool like the Gophers would make it to the Sweet 16, but I would just be happy, I think, if the Gophers made the tournament. So it's always... It's always interesting to have your team in the tournament. It's like I pay a lot less attention, although I actually probably pay more attention because I'm more inclined to bet on it if my teams aren't involved. So I probably pay more attention to the spreads and the actual games themselves than just my team. So the next bet was the typical weekly bet between Lieber and Kanzemius. Lieber had Northwestern plus 10.5. Kanzemius had Iowa, and Lieber won that one outright as the Northwestern Wildcats won that game straight up. So he covered easily, obviously. So Lieber collected $20 and continued kind of his hot streak this second half of the year.
I love it. I love to see Lieber back in it. And you know, it's almost to the point where we got to start cheering for the Fargo Flash because Lieber's getting all the money.
I know. It's really turned around from the beginning of the year. So it'll be, I'm sure they'll be laying bets down throughout bowl season. It'll be interesting to see if they just pick a few games during bowl season or if they try and bet multiple games. But it'll be interesting to see how far they go with that. So last one was the bet that was placed yesterday, which is the Rams-Chiefs game. So Sauce took the over. The over-under they had was 64. Sauce took the over, and Corey took the under for $50. So the interesting thing on this one, obviously, is a lot of sportsbooks have this at 63.5 just to avoid the potential push. But obviously the news this afternoon came down that this game has been moved from Mexico City to L.A. So due to the horrible field conditions, I placed my bet on this game on the under due to the horrible field conditions just about an hour or so before they decided to move it to L.A. So but the first thing that came to my mind is hashtag life is better with money on the line. So I'm sitting on the over like Corey. What's your thoughts on the big Rams-Chiefs matchup?
So I think Corey's angle to taking the under and being confident about it was just like the altitude in Mexico City and how it's like even worse than Denver. It's like really thin air. So, you know, these high powered Tyreek Hill, Kareem Hunt type guys, Gurley, they might be out of breath. You know, they might actually, you know, slow them down a little bit. Well, it'll be interesting to see if the line moves at all now with it being in Los Angeles. And I don't know, all the high over under games this year, like that the Saints have been involved in and the Rams have been involved in, they've almost all gone over. So I really do like the over in this game, even though it's a crazy 64.5. I think it's just going to be a shootout.
Yeah. I had one person on Twitter ask me this afternoon if the bet's still on due to the location change. And my response was that typically what sportsbooks will do in like a situation like this is they'll void all of the current bets. So if somebody had the Rams -2, now that the Rams are at home, that line is more likely to move to like 4.5 or 5. They're going to void all the bets because the venue has changed itself. Now, with the over-under bets, they typically, at least in my experience, have not voided those bets, and they've left those as is, thinking the thinking being the over-under is probably not going to change. It's just maybe the home team, now that they're actually playing at home, or, you know, not playing on a neutral site in the case of the Chiefs, loses a little bit of that advantage. So we'll see, because that was Corey's angle, you know, partly with the altitude, if they decide to cancel this bet. So I, you know, because I could see them canceling that just because, you know, different reasons and circumstances have changed. But I think typically a sports book will not cancel the over-under bet. So I don't know. We'll find out what happens to my bet. And if they cancel it, I might say thank you, because not as confident in it now that they're going to be playing on the fast track in L.A.
Yeah, either way, it's going to be an awesome game, and like the first Monday Night Football game that actually matters.
Oh, I know.
They've just been an awful slate of games. Even the Thursday night games have been better than the Monday night games this year.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see. So the only other bet update I had was the Gopher over-under win totals has gotten really interesting, because we're down to two games. Sauce had 6.5 versus Kanzemius. Sauce had the under, Kanzemius the over, and 5.5 with Tommy. Sauce again with the under and Tommy with the over. They're sitting at 5 right now. So one more Gopher win in these last two, and Tommy collects two more, and Kanzemius collects. And if the Gophers lose out, Meat Sauce wins both bets. So that is the bets update for the week. We'll move on to the quotes.
They're memorable, they're timeless. They'll probably get Meat Sauce fired. It's time for the quotes of the week.
Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes.
Power trip quotes. Power trip quotes.
All right, it's time for the three quotes of the week. Coming in at number 3 this week, it's Meat Sauce from November 5th.
Good question.
Can I ask you guys another question?
Oh, God.
And this isn't like, I thought of this yesterday, I heard somebody say this yesterday, and this isn't like me doing the bit where I'm like asking something even though I know the answer and then I make it sound really stupid.
Just ask the goddamn question.
Why is this the 21st century when it's only the year 2000?
Another deep thought from Meat Sauce.
Very deep. It's just it's a classic sauce question. You know, oh, loved it.
Oh, I had to put the part leading up to it, because I love how disgusted Corey was when Sauce was like, can I ask a question? And he's just like, just ask it.
Yeah, I think he reached his question quota at that point of the show already. But
it's like when your 4-year-old is going, why?
Yeah, pretty genius from Sauce. All right, coming in at number 2, it's Chris Hockey with the assist to Ben Lieber.
You're kind of splotchy.
Yeah. You should see my jeans.
Brilliant.
BlueChewTubles.com.
Yeah. Oh, my. That they've gotten mileage out of that.
Yes, they have. And finally, at number 1 this week, it's Corey Cove from November 9th.
Well, I just want that to be my theme moving forward, is that I'm attracted to female animated butts.
He has been talking a lot about Elastigirl.
Yeah, so I forget what... There used to be a streak of... Oh, where he mentioned anything Sweden, and then they played the Swedish Chef. Like, we were
right.
Keeping track of the days in a row things. We have to start, like, an Elastigirl streak for every time that he mentions Elastigirl on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the other thing that's been slightly disturbing lately, too, is between the regular show and the After Party podcast, Corey's been talking about animals quite frequently lately as well.
Yeah, the squirrel breasts. And...
That, and then I don't know if you heard the After Party podcast where he was talking about Meat Sauce and Muppet, and he was asking very specific questions.
Yeah, like watching him take a shower.
Yes. And I'm like, Corey, is there something you need to tell us, or is he just generally curious? I laughed so hard at that Muppet episode. Oh my God.
I think that's awesome.
I think that's my favorite After Party podcast so far. That was, gosh, like Corey just had me rolling, because he just kept just pursuing a little farther. And I don't know if he was just legitimately probing Meat Sauce, or if he has some other fascination that we need to know about.
Yeah, I think it's funny. He's talked about it on the air before, too. Is like, whenever Mark Rosen's on, his goal is to try to make Mark feel as uncomfortable as possible. Like, right. Ask him, you know, you can catch him saying a bunch of, you know, ask him a ton of weird questions all the time. So I think he might try to do that to meet Sauce sometimes, especially in the after party and stuff. And it makes for really good radio.
Definitely. Well, good quotes. And Corey won this week. So apparently, yeah. Chris Hockey didn't let his bias stand in the way, and he let Corey win for once.
Yes, for once, Corey gets to win.
All right.
It's time for the weekly segment of Your Thoughts. Copyright Dark Star.
All right. This week on Your Thoughts, we've got our Paul Charchian interview. So take me to church.
Take me to church. I crawl through the fog and into your light. Show me a gem on the way where I got starters on by. Facing Odell Beckham Jr. My God, help me get out alive. Take me to church. Last time I had a shot was 2009. Chose true for the win. He kneels short of the line. Listen, charge up back. You, my God, you were saving my life. Take me to church.
Okay, so I want to make sure I give a proper introduction, so here we go. He is a member of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association Hall of Fame, inducted in 2013. He is a KFAN legend. He hosts Fantasy Football Weekly. He hosts Video Games Weekly. He appears weekly on the Friday Football Feast, and of course, on the Power Trip, doing the Fantasy Charts Challenge every Friday during football season. In addition to all of that, he runs fanball.com, the most innovative sports fantasy site on the web. And on a personal note, even though I'm Power Trip Betts, if I was doing KFAN Survivor, he might be the last person I throw off a KFAN. So welcome to the Betts and Quotes podcast, Charge.
It's good to be here, guys. Thank you, Chuck and Dave. It's nice to have voices to go with the Twitter accounts, although Chuck, you and I have met, which is nice.
Yes.
And I was surprised. No, I think I was the first one at the station that knew you were in Kansas City. Everybody assumed that you listened so I guess regularly or religiously that everybody assumed you were local.
Yeah, you broke the news because I gave you some lion bars after you were for a fantasy football training camp. And yeah,
and that's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing this now, because you greased the wheels with the lion bar, which is very smart.
All I have to do is provide lion bars. That's awesome. So, well, I want to start with, I'm going to go back even farther than our little lion bar encounter and perhaps explore a potential meeting that we had long, long ago. I'm going to take you back to the mid-1980s.
Oh, jeez.
You went to Eden Prairie. I grew up in Hutchinson, and of course, Eden Prairie and Hutchinson used to play against each other in the Suburban West Conference back in the day.
Yeah, I tell people that. It's like they can't even believe that was a thing. Like, wait a minute. Let me see if I understand this. Eden Prairie's conference had Glencoe and Hutchinson.
Yes.
And Orono. Like, yeah.
Waconia. Absolutely.
For one of my track like sectionals or regionals was in Worthington.
Oh my gosh.
That was like our region.
It was yeah.
Worthington. Yes. That's a long time ago.
So I'm slightly younger than you, and my older brother played high school football for Hutch back when they won state titles in 84 and 85. And yeah. So we used to travel to all the games. And so I have this image of myself being at Eden Prairie in the visitor stands, watching my brother play, you know, little middle school me, just living and dying with every snap of the football for Hutch. And then meanwhile, on the other side of the field, there's senior Paul Charchian in the stands with his long flowing hair surrounded by the most beautiful girls in Eden Prairie High School, contemplating what he's going to do someday when he sells Fanball for $37.8 million.
That highly accurate, you know, except for all of it. And you didn't mention nearly enough pimples and a complete dearth of girls. That was the, that's the reality of it right there. Yeah, it was funny how, you know, being on the track and cross country team really did not reel in the girls like I thought it was going to. And mostly it was just a lot of lonely miles, you know, running with the other skinny dudes.
That's awesome. Well, I'll continue to hold on to my image, though. I picture the long flowing hair.
Yeah, your team won. You know, we were the idiots who would schedule, like, our homecoming against Hutchinson. We'd lose our homecoming game, like, 72-3.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a couple fun years those 2 years, so, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we'll kind of fast forward from the Eden Prairie days, and so you started Fantasy Football Weekly in 1993, and very quickly after that, you took the publication into Fantasy Football Weekly on The Fan. What was the process like that got you onto The Fan? Had you been on The Fan prior to starting up Fantasy Football Weekly, or what did that look like?
It's funny that you asked because I just right before you came on, I tweeted it at Randy Shaver, and he was my in at The Fan.
Okay.
Of course, now he's the Channel 11 KRE evening news anchor, and then he had a show, Shave and Dave. They would periodically talk fantasy football. So I knew Randy played. And when we launched the magazine in 93, it was local only. And he was about the only name person that we knew was playing. So we just started sending him the magazine. And before long, his producer reached out and started and had me on as a guest one time. And that turned into a weekly spot in our first year. And so that was how I first got on. And I was still working my day job at an accounting firm. I was right out of college, and I was at an accounting firm as a network administrator. And so they'd have me on the air, and I'm hiding in my office doing this. I'm doing the interviews I'm not supposed to be doing while I'm at work. Meanwhile, they're all listening to The Fan. So they all know I'm on. So they're all listening, and so I think I'm trying to be sneaky, but they're all listening, and they knew I was on. And it was a couple of years later when they had enough of my shenanigans, and they fired me for doing fantasy football stuff at work, which I kind of was. I wasn't doing a ton, but I was doing some stuff at work, and yeah, that was the end of that.
Well, nobody ever does fantasy football at work.
No, certainly not. And definitely not an accounting firm. The accountants hate fantasy football, let me tell you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then what ended up happening was we had back then, you know, because there were way more people playing fantasy than there was any information that was out. So, you know, what would end up happening is, like, Chad Hartman would have a show, and people would just be calling up going, "Who do I start?" In the show, and they weren't even talking fantasy, right? I mean, talk about anything. These doofuses that all call in and looking for fantasy help. And so eventually Doug Westerman said, why don't we just dedicate a show to it, and then we can tell all these nitwits who call in that they need to call into the show instead. So he gave us the 8 a.m. time slot, and they sold it to Mystic Lake. And myself and Eric Webster and John the Commissioner Habermeyer would roll out every Saturday morning at 8, and we'd be there at, like, you know, 7:15, 7:30, and all these guys that had been up all night, and they're haggard and they're drunk, and they're, you know, it's really bad, and they'd be in front of us, and they're falling asleep, and they're nodding off, and a lot of them are mad because they've lost all their money, and they don't even know what fantasy is, but, you know, they don't have a ride home. It was really bad back then.
That is awesome. The good old early days.
And one other thing, get me going on this. These are all stories nobody ever cares to ask. So now I'm excited to tell some of this stuff. This was the mid 90s. This is like 95, we think, was our first year. It could have been 94, but we're not positive because, frankly, nobody really remembers, and we don't have any documentation of it. Mm-hmm. The technology was not very good for doing remotes. So about every sixth show, we couldn't get connected back to the station.
Oh.
And so we would have to, at some point, just abort from doing it from Mystic Lake and then jump in our cars and drive from Mystic Lake to the station. And for 20 minutes, they would, like, run, you know, something else in the middle of our show while we were disconnected. And then we'd show up and try to finish the show as best we could.
Wow, that is definitely primitive technology.
Yeah, the old days. And Chad Abbott was the guy who was out there setting everything up and running all the wires and everything else. He was our technician then.
Well, that explains why it didn't work one out of six times then, right?
That's right. Exactly.
So when did you first start making appearances on the Power Trip?
Well, I don't know. I mean, on and off, you know, lots of different times. But
right.
I'm not a Power Trip regular by any stretch, I don't think, because, you know, but we had the Bay Bracket, and I participated in that for many years while that was around. But mostly, you know, my Power Trip experiences have been pretty mostly limited to the fantasy football challenge that we have, and that has, I don't know, it's grown a lot. We'll see if this is the last year, if they finally get tired of subjecting themselves to this. They keep thinking one of these years they're just going to go, you know what, forget it. We've had it with this. Why are we doing this? This serves no purpose. But they keep signing up for it, so we keep doing it.
It's a fantastic bit. I tell you, of all the things that, you know, I do with my stupid Twitter account, like, it by far gets the most traction and the most feedback from people. Like, people are passionate about the Fantasy Charge Challenge. They're, you know, like when Sauce did the buyout last year, I was getting all sorts of tweets about, how did they let him do this? And, everything. I mean, people are really into it. And I think people, especially those of us that are going on the Vegas trip this year, like, it's going to be very interesting to see if, you know, the person that's has to ride that bus at the end of the trip. It's like, I don't know how you'd enjoy the Vegas trip knowing what you're facing at the end of it.
No kidding. Now, I have, right, the Ghost is almost certain to lose, unfortunately.
Yep.
Which is too bad. Imagine if it had reversed itself and the Ghost was almost certain to win.
Oh.
And we had all of them on the bus. I think this thing would change dramatically. I think you'd have a bunch of rubes and listeners who would like, bring it on, I'm going too. I think this thing would turn into a party.
You'd
have a bunch of people signing up to go. They'd pay their own way. They'd fly one way to Vegas for the whole thing, and then they would take the bus home. I think it turned into a 37-hour party with a bunch of listeners.
I still think it would be hilarious if nobody buys out, if there were a couple of rubes that did that anyway this year, just to kind of, you know, watch and document it. So
yeah, it could be a document. You could film it, right? You could film the whole thing,
right,
and turn it into a quasi-documentary.
I think it would be hysterical.
That would be awesome.
Fun. Yeah.
So, Paul, I've always wondered, who came up with the Fantasy Charge Challenge idea? Was it you or was it them? Or
it was them. Okay. They did. And, at the time, I think the first penalty that we ever did was Bean Boozled. I think that was the first one, although there was a shoveling horse poop one.
It was. It was the shoveling horse poop one because it was the very first year, and Superstar was still on the show at the time, and he was losing. And when he left, then that automatically dropped Chris into the losing spot. So Chris ended up having to shovel because Star got let go.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yep. You're 100. I'm not surprised that you have it documented, Chuck.
That's part of my job.
Yeah, that's right. it's funny how these things work out, right? And now I think Chris has managed to find his way to the bottom of this thing.
Yeah.
Every time, but almost every time.
Yeah, you know, Sauce lost last year, and Corey lost. Actually, Corey has lost the previous two because he had to bring John Creasel's member through security at the airport, and then he had to grow his hair out for a year. So
that's right.
Chris actually hasn't lost in four years, but he's at the bottom right now.
He's at the bottom. The Bean Boozled one was bad for him. Really, really bad.
Have you ever seen the video of that on YouTube?
No, I never did. Is it on YouTube now?
Yeah, just Google like Chris Hockey Bean Boozled, and it is hysterical to watch. It was one thing to listen to, but to watch is hilarious.
Bean Boozled. I'm a little bit bitter that I have never once been a part of any of the losing bits, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to kind of ask you, is we've gone over all these awful punishments that they've come up with. Like, if you could design your punishment for next year, what would it be?
Oh, man, that just putting me on the spot. I don't know.
there's a ton of them.
But. Yeah, I think what immediately comes to mind for most of these guys is a second circumcision. And it's got to be live in studio. So I think that's... I think that sounds about right.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I'm trying to get to the good part of Chris eating these. Oh,
yes.
Here we go.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He's the wincing is coming in now.
Oh, the look on his face. Oh, yeah. Listeners out there,
the poor guy.
If you've never seen this video, go to YouTube. Just do Chris Hoggy Bean Boozled. It is hilarious.
Oh, it's bad. Oh, it's bad. Now, what was great about that year was that there was a penalty every week.
I love
and
that.
So, you know, yeah, you had to eat one of the beans every week. Yep. He's in agony right now.
Yeah.
Oh, the poor guy. He wants to spit it out, but he can't.
Yeah, it was a great punishment that way, and especially with the Bean Boozled bit, because you never, you know, you might have to face the punishment, but then you might get one that wasn't one of the bad ones. So, it was always a question whether or not you'd even suffer a punishment on a week-to-week basis. But I did like the weekly punishment. So,
part of it.
There's a way to incorporate the weekly punishment back into the bit. I think it'd be awesome.
I think it would energize it a little bit.
Yeah,
we need to come up with that. If you guys think of anything, let me know, and we'll send it down the line for next year. Because I think that would be great.
I think so. Yeah. So if you if you had your choice to put any KFAN on air personality on the bus home from Vegas, who would you pick?
I really don't have a horse in this race. I don't mind. I don't, you know, who wins and who loses really doesn't matter to me. And I'm not rooting for or against any of them, but without a doubt, the person to get tortured the most is Sauce.
Oh yeah.
Sauce needs somebody to be around him, to bounce stuff off of and to talk to and to, you know, to validate his existence, I think. And, and without that, I think Sauce would really, really struggle a lot. And I think it would be the torture would be by far the hardest for him.
It'd be the most entertaining too, because he would document that. You know, he's always wanting to tweet about everything and videos, and you know, he would project the experience.
Yeah, the tweet fest. It would be a nonstop Twitter fest for him.
Can you imagine if Sauce's phone broke 30 minutes into the trip?
Oh no.
See, that should be part of this bit, is no phone.
Well, I think they talked about that, but then they kind of came to the agreement that, you know, everybody's got families, they got kids, you know, it's going to be kind of hard to do, you know, to be 37 hours completely off the grid. So, but yeah, it would be hilarious. Oh my God, I would die of boredom if I had to sit there for 37 hours with no phone.
What if you said no phone and no electronics at all?
Right.
So you can't bring a Switch. You can't, you know, watch movies. Oh God.
Miserable.
I think if it were me, I've already got this planned out. They, you know, the next Game of Thrones is coming in April.
Right.
I want to catch up. I want to watch all of the episodes to get, so I am up to speed on everything. That would be it. That's how I would do it.
Well, you're coming to Vegas with the Power Trip in March, right?
That's currently my plan. And, it's for two reasons. One, it's for the Power Trip and for those guys, and I've never done it. And secondly, I work a lot with a radio station in Washington, D.C., and one of their hosts named Steve Zabin. And he has he does a listener trip over the same weekend every year.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And so I've got two reasons to come out, and I'm looking forward to I'll split my time between both, but it'd be really fun to do both. So I'm anxious to do that.
Well, here's your plan. You take your return plane ticket, you bet it all on the craps table, and if you lose, you got your Game of Thrones. There you go. Take the bus home.
Yeah, exactly. I love it.
All right. Well, I want to turn the attention.
And, oh, by the way, I would consider that. I've actually thought about doing that and throwing my hat in the ring and just say, you know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the bus ride. But here's what turned out that's happened is a band that I've been waiting to play in Minneapolis for 20 years is finally coming to Minneapolis, and it's on the Sunday night of that weekend.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't spend 37 hours on the bus trying to get home. So that's not going to work.
Definitely. Definitely not. You can't miss that.
No, I can't.
All right, so I want to get into a little bit of fantasy football here and your strategy. You're kind of the inventor of the do the opposite draft strategy. In this day of the top running backs and that also perform as wide receiver twos or at sometimes even wide receiver ones, do you still preach the same strategy?
Yes. It does, you know, and oftentimes most of the time it works out. Where do the opposite is a little bit trickier. Is it really it it almost mandates that you at least pay some attention to your team during the season, because, you know, the key sort of premise behind it is that you can go find running back help. And almost always you can. It doesn't have to be in the first three rounds to get help at the running back position. You know, but you end up missing out on a Todd Gurley. But at the same time, you don't get Leonard Fournette and you don't get Dalvin Cook, right? And so it's really about mitigating a lot of risk. And when you typically look at the top 12 running backs in the league, half of them came from outside of the top outside of the top four rounds anyway. This year, James Conner, obviously totally off the grid. James White is inside the top 10. Adrian Peterson's inside the top 10. Matt Breida is running back 12 right now. TJ Yeldon is running back 13. Tevin Coleman is running back 14. So, you know, Philip Lindsay is 17. Nick Chubb. I mean, you know, some of these guys are off the waiver wire for pizza. In fact, several of these guys were off the waiver wire. Breida and Yeldon and Lindsay and Nick Chubb. And, you know, these are waiver wire guys for Pete's sake that can power you to a championship. And then meanwhile, you've got Antonio Brown, who has scored in seven games this year.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think if I have a top four or five pick and I have the opportunity to get like a Hunt, a Gurley, you know, one of those really top tier guys, I normally take one of those guys instead of just going receiver right away. But
yeah, and those guys are safer for sure. When you look at the running backs, where the real danger comes is the second half of the first round. Those are the guys that don't have the proven track record that a Gurley or a Hunt or a Kamara or a Melvin Gordon have got. Those are the guys that you're hoping pan out. And so many times, you know, something goes horribly wrong and they don't. And so, yeah, if you're going to go running back in the first round, you want to do it at the very top of the position.
I know every year for the fantasy football training camp, you do the analysis of whether or not do the opposite work the previous year, and it pretty much did. Have you done the analysis yet this year so far, or do you just kind of wait till after the season's over?
Yeah, I wait, in part because I'm lazy, and you know, and then it's an incomplete science right now. You know, as I look at the wide receivers for this season, you know, these are the guys who are at the top, are all guys that we thought would be at the top.
Yep.
Adam Thielen, I had him as like wide receiver 14. So, but it was still close. But Michael Thomas, Davante Adams, DeAndre Hopkins, Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, Tyreek Hill. Yeah, there's no surprises here. You know, these are great receivers who are great every year. That's the beauty of it. Is just it's such a low risk move. So that's part of what always attracts me to it, is the predictability of that position.
Yep. So how many fantasy football leagues do you personally participate in where you're actively managing a roster week to week?
Six.
Okay.
Yeah, which is I've had it be much higher, but I've pulled it down to six. But now that I'm doing guillotine leagues, that's going to be a big thing. And I've got one of those this year. I might have five next year. Okay. They're so much fun. Yeah.
I love that idea.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm just upset that I didn't get into one this year. I got
me too.
Just didn't get around to it in time. And of course, the season started. But I'm totally on board with that. I love that idea.
We're going to help, because a lot of people don't know. You want to really play with 17 people, right?
Right.
And so a lot of people don't have 16 friends who want to play. So we will have a matchmaking service at FanBall for guillotine leagues next year.
Oh, sweet.
For sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. Just so you can say, you know, I want to go join a league. Okay, you know, how much do you want to put, you know, what kind of buy-in do you want? And, you know, here's 16 guys, go. And we'll set all that stuff up and help you find other people that want to play.
I love that.
So do any of your personal leagues have a punishment, or is it all cash?
Well, let me see here. I don't have a punishment going this year, but we've had them in the past, and then it all fell apart when PA lost and quit the league rather than do the punishment.
that shocks me. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
He still owes Nordo a shirtless 40.
Yes, he does. And he owes us a combine, right? So the loser his year was supposed to go do the combine. You have to do the 40-yard dash, the cones, the shuttle, the whole thing, right? And you had to do it right before the next year's draft. So he quit. And yeah, so now he didn't do it. And then before that, but what we did have before that, and this is a great idea, I think, is every week of the season, we have one highlighted matchup. So, you know, it's Chuck versus Dave. that week. It's week four, and it's Chuck versus Dave. The loser gets to the winner gets to reset the loser's team name and logo for that week to anything they want.
Nice.
Anything they want.
Nice.
And
oh,
let me
my.
Tell you, yeah, there's some stuff that we've seen that is wholly inappropriate for it, really, at humans.
Yes.
So you can have a lot of fun with that. And every week we've got one winning team, one losing team. So that's what I encourage people to do, and it's a ton of fun.
That's one way to keep people from checking their roster at work.
That's true. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you just head over to Dave's roster thinking you might offer him a trade or something. Oh my God.
All right, Paul. So I want to change the conversation over here to the fan ball. So you started fan ball back in the day. Was it just a matter of transitioning Fantasy Football Weekly to online format?
That's a really thoughtful question. Part of it was, Fantasy Football Weekly was very much a 1 week endeavor. So we were operating to get everything done by Sunday night. We printed the magazine on Sunday nights, and so our whole week was just built around leading up to Sunday night. And then we'd send it off to the printer and we'd exhale. And then, you know, starting even Monday morning, it would be on newsstands in the Twin Cities. And then we'd ship it all over the country. And when we got into the web business, we quickly found out that that's not good enough. And you had to, you know, it's suddenly you've got a 24/7 job trying to keep up with all the machinations of the NFL and all the, you know, all the things that were happening. And so I think we went into it with the assumption that we were going to do basically an online version of the magazine, and very quickly had to reorient our expectations to providing, you know, lightning fast, instant content and updates. And ultimately it turned into much more than that, including a full blown commissioner program and tons of fantasy games and contests and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. My actual first year playing fantasy football, we did it on Fanball, and that was
Thank you.
I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
It's kind of crazy.
Wow, you're young. That's I appreciate you doing that in seventh grade. Yeah, that's impressive. My daughter is in seventh grade, and I imagine her playing right now, and it would not go well.
So why did you decide to get out of the initial version of Fanball?
Well, it was... one key reason. At the time, and this is 2005, the Major League Baseball was suing all of the fantasy operators, claiming that they had the exclusive rights to player names and stats. And we were extremely, extremely nervous about the industry's ability to deal with that. And what would happen is, so what they did is they would, and they did this to us. They would say, oh, hey, we noticed that you've got a fantasy baseball coverage and a game, and we'd be happy to license that to you for $5 million. And then of course, you know, nobody could afford that except their TV broadcast partners. Mm. And so the whole industry was on the verge of shuttering because of it. It would have been catastrophically bad, but fortunately one small company decided to sue them back, and it went into court, and this little company beat Major League Baseball at three different levels as they kept getting it appealed. And they appealed it all the way to the Supreme Court before the Supreme Court refused to hear their appeal. And, but in 2005, we felt like this, you know, unless this six-person company that filed this lawsuit ends up winning, we're all going to get shut out of business. And so we found a good seller at a good price and we got out. So that was, you know, that was a lot of what motivated us at the time.
Hmm.
So and then, by the way, and then they, by the way, they ran into the ground in 2 years. So
yes,
yeah, we all left. You know, it was all bad. And you know, new owners come in, and you know, it didn't go very well, unfortunately. And almost everybody was that had meaningfully built Fanball up was gone within a couple of years. And you know, I went off and did League Safe.
Sure. So I want to talk about what I think is the coolest thing in daily fantasy sports. Period. Is the Fanball Daily Auctions. How did you and your team come up with the idea?
And thank you very much, Dave. I appreciate that. And it's so much fun. And the genesis goes back to old Fanball. We had a game called Bid to Play. And this was an auction game that we had that we rolled out in like 2000 when nobody was auctioning. And so it never got any traction, but it was so much fun. And the way it worked was it had eBay was our model at the time. Again, this is 2000. And so we'd actually roll out like 20 players at a time. And for the course of like 10 minutes, you'd be bidding back and forth on all 20 players. And then that round would end. And we'd have another round of 20 players, another round of 20 players. And so we'd build these big, long rosters over a long time with eBay style bidding, where you could put in like a high bid on a player. Back then, it'd be like, you know, I don't know, Emmett Smith or something. And you'd put like $46 in Emmett Smith. But like eBay, you wouldn't go immediately to 46. It'd go like 17, 18, 19 and, you know, work its way up. But that was the genesis, was this game called Bid to Play. And we always loved it, and everybody who played it loved it. But because it was an auction game, not that many people played it. But we kept it in the backs of our minds. And now, you know, that auctioning is like, half of the league's auction now. That was we decided the time was right to try to bring one back, but we couldn't make it 40 minutes. You know, nobody play that. So we were like, how do I compress all the fun of an auction down to 7 minutes? And that was our goal with this game, was to get it to be just intense, packed 7 minutes of frantic bidding action, and that's what we've built with the Fanball auction game.
Yeah, it's just so crazy. There's so much strategy that I'm still like trying to, you know, input into mine. Like, do I want to have your rankings on the side, and then I'm bidding on four guys? It's just, it's a really fun 10 minutes, that's for sure.
What I love about it, what I absolutely, because Dave and I are both absolutely addicted to it, and we're probably the
awesome.
we're probably the two biggest spokesmen for it. But the thing that I absolutely love about it is there are never two auctions that go exactly the same way, and it's like you're constantly having to adjust your strategy on the fly to deal with, like, okay, this auction, apparently one of the people isn't even participating. Like, maybe they missed the notification or whatever. And so I know this person's not bidding on anybody, so I'm bidding against these other four people. And then another auction, you might target somebody and get outbid for them. And it's like, oh my God, I got to change the whole thing on the fly. I just love that there's never two auctions that go at all the same.
Isn't it funny? Because one of our worries originally was, if we use the same group of players every day, and we do, so it's the same 36 players on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday it's a different 36, but you can play these things just back to back to back to back. You're playing eight times a day if you want to, but it's the same 36 players on that day. So we were worried that it would be too similar for people to play back to back, but because the players come up in different order all the time, and because people try different strategies, and you've got a different group of opponents each time you play, they all have sort of their own DNA in every one of those auctions.
Totally.
For sure. And it's totally about who comes up first. You know, you could have Mahomes and Gurley and stuff go first. Well, then at the end, you could, you know, if you just, if you only have five guys who already have a quarterback, well, Drew Brees might be sitting there as the last guy to go off, and you get Drew Brees for a dollar. You know,
yeah.
There's just so many elements to it. I love it.
Thank you. I'm glad you guys love it. That means a lot. And we're trying to sort of spread the word, because it's so different and there's nothing like it. And so we're trying to spread the word. And I appreciate the fact that you're going to bat for us. It's great.
It is absolutely the best. And usually what ends up happening, because I just run out of time before kickoff on Sunday to get on, because I'll usually get online about 11 and it's like, okay, let me check my fantasy teams and start doing a couple auctions. And then it's like, okay, I got to do another one. Then I just run out of time. So,
yeah,
and by the
yeah.
way, David, won. What place did you get last week? You got fourth place.
Yeah. I took fourth in the Take Me to Charge challenge on Fan.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what'd you win? Like $500?
Well, I tied for fourth with two decimal scoring, so I got 350, but
not
it's
bad.
My biggest daily cash, so I was really happy.
Outstanding.
I heard Ertz at the end, and I was sitting in bed with my headphones on while my fiance was sleeping, just watching Ertz go off, and you know, they got the ball back with 42 seconds, and he put up like 60 yards and three more catches, and I'm just watching myself go up the leaderboard. It was really intense.
How much fun is fantasy sports when that happens?
Oh yeah,
it's the best.
It is.
Yep.
It's just when you are playing for something really important, right? And you really care and you're fully engaged, there's nothing else like it. It's so much fun.
So speaking of playing for something, obviously me being Power Trip Bets and liking the gambling angle of things, when sports gambling eventually gets legalized in Minnesota, which whether that's next year or a couple years down the road, do you see that impacting you guys at Fanball at all?
Yeah, I think in subtle ways for sure. If one of the things that we've learned in the fantasy sports industry is that the closest adjacency to gamblers is fantasy players, mm-hmm. sports gamblers. And so, you know, we think, well, if nothing else, even if we never offer, you know, a bet at Fanball, which I think there's a good chance we never will. We think our customer base will be really, really valuable to a lot of companies that do take bets, and fantasy is got some of the same traits as sports betting and some different ones, but I think there's just a lot of interest in both, and I do see my wife just got home and the dogs are very excited.
That's Scraps. Yeah,
that's Scraps and Pepper. Scraps.
Yes.
Hi, guys.
We got them on the podcast.
Yes. Scraps and Pepper. Hi. Oh, they're very excited. Mommy's home. That's great. Oh, hi, guys. I wish you could see him. Of course, I think my dogs are cute. Everybody does.
I like when you tweet photos of them. They're pretty cool.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. Everybody thinks their dog. It's like kids. You know, everybody thinks their kids are cute. Everybody thinks their dogs are cute. But yeah, they fight and wrestle a lot during the day, which is a ton of fun. I love that. Yeah.
So I when it relates to gambling, I like your theory for fantasy football that, you know, like, for example, when AJ Green went down, a lot of people think, oh, well, you know, I'm a Tyler Boyd owner and that's going to just really be a boom to me because AJ Green is gone. And, you know, you guys always say on Fantasy Football Weekly, you know, what's bad for the offense is bad mm-hmm. for the offense. And so right. Do you see that the same parallel with sports gambling where, you know, gambling isn't necessarily going to cannibalize fantasy sports? In fact, if anything, it might bring more people into fantasy sports. Do you see it that way, or do you see that it might be somewhat of a cannibalization?
I really don't, and I don't think it'll be a cannibalization. I think what's going to happen is you're going to see smart game designers start filling this space halfway between sports gambling and fantasy sports. Mm-hmm. America grew up on fantasy sports as much as gambling, unlike the rest of the world that it's all been gambling and only gambling, and fantasy's not really on the map in most of these other countries. You know, here, we grew up as fantasy sports players. We're used to managing rosters and following players and, you know, making transactions and stuff. And the companies that figure out how to make a wagering game that feels like fantasy, I think are going to have a huge hit. There's only so much you can do with Minnesota +3. And, you know, that's not to say that it isn't compelling or interesting, because it is, but you can only do so much with that. Fantasy opens up the door to all kinds of permutations of sports gambling that we haven't seen before. If you can build hooks into your game that feel like fantasy and they make us think the way we think as fantasy owners, I think that's going to be, it's going to be a huge boon for companies that figure that out.
Yep. Yep.
All right. So I want to get into your personal life here and figure out what a NFL Sunday looks like for you. We all kind of, you know, can see you with 12 different screens in front of you here with a bucket of chicken wings. But what's it look like for you on Sunday?
It's funny. You guys ask me all these questions nobody ever asks. So Sunday morning for me works like this. Get up, let's say 7 o'clock, and almost always the beat reporters have timed some news that they were sitting on until like 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. and they auto tweet it out. And so I sort of try to catch up on that, and I adjust our player rankings. And I all day Sunday, I am on and off adjusting player rankings on Fanball, which I take very seriously and put a ton of work into Monday through Friday. And And so, you know, I want to get it right on Sunday and try to react to all the things that are happening on Sunday. So that's sort of phase one is following news and adjusting rankings. And then I do a lot of out of market, well, and in market radio. So I do four or five different stops every Sunday morning for different radio stations, one in Kansas City, Chuck.
Yes.
As you know, on 610 every that's at 10:45. Yep, 10:45 every Sunday. And so I go around and I do my different radio stops from my home. I've got an ISDN line at my home, and so it generally sounds pretty good. And we just do updates on, you know, who's hurt, who's playing, what are the angles, you know, that kind of stuff. And you know, who are your sleepers for the day, and, you know, answer those kinds of questions. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, I run out and get food. So I get out of the house one time on Sunday, and I make myself go get out of the house and just get away from a little bit. And I'll sit and have Chipotle or something and answer tweets for 45 minutes. And then it's back. Then it's in front of the big screen on the DirecTV channel that's got the 8 games on it, mm-hmm. you know, where they will segment it up 8 ways.
Yep.
You know, I'm a big believer in projectors. So I've got the projector and I can beam this thing out over the wall. And so having it split up 8 ways is really watchable. And then it's a tweet fest all day. So I'm watching 8 games and I'm like, oh, did you see this? Oh, this just happened. This just happened. I'm tweeting my head off watching 8 different games at one time. And that's a blast. And that's kind of the highlight of the Sunday is the constant stream. I mean, you can't be so ADD that you can't enjoy, you know, 8 games. It's just, you know, there's no amount of ADD that can't be satiated by 8 games happening at one time, because there's always something interesting going on.
Yeah, definitely. I got rid of DirecTV a year ago, and that is one of the biggest things I miss is that 8 screen view, especially, you know, when there's gets down to the end of the year and you've got something riding on the games. It's important. That's awesome. So
it's fun.
And of course, if I'm away from the TV, I love that you tweet out everything, because it keeps me, like, I feel like I'm not missing anything in terms of, like, important scores or injuries or whatever. So it's like just charge, one right after the other. So
it is fun. And the there are people who hate it. They're like, I have my own TV. You don't have to tell me so-and-so scored a 72-yard pass. You know, I can see it myself. But I don't know. It's fantasy football. It's Twitter. So yeah, that's how it's going to work.
Absolutely. So I just got a couple more. I got to channel my inner PA for this question. Do you or do you not have a cruise book for January of 2019?
Not yet. In fact, I might. Don't tempt me. It's not. I don't think that's going to happen this time. And the only bad thing about it was that I missed the feast. I have no regrets, except that one regret is that I missed. It's the only feast I've missed, and I have a lot of regret about that part of it, unfortunately. And yeah, I was the part that Paul, that PA never says, is it was a group trip, and so I was working with the constraints of the scheduling of the group. And I suppose I could have just said, no, too bad, go without me or whatever. But that was the way it worked out.
Yeah, well, don't worry. You'll hear about it for the next 20 years from PA.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I thought I'd hear. I thought the ribbing would be once.
No.
The
last question I had for you is, so when you're in Vegas, or if and when you make it to a casino around the Twin Cities area, what games do you like to play?
I have 2 craps for the high speed action of craps and the mm-hmm. math of craps, and for the cooperative environment, which I love. To me, this is the big part of it. I like that predominantly we're all on the same team and we're all working together, and we're all trying to beat the house as a group. And I like that. I like that vibe. I like that it's conversational. I like that you're high fiving the guy next to you. I like that you get on a roll and people are throwing you tip money. I love craps. And then I go to the other extreme, Pai Gow.
Yes, thank you.
The slowest game that there possibly is, but it also has this shared trait of being cooperative.
Yes.
You know, you can show your cards to the rest of the table and go, how should I set my hand? I love that. you know, you get drinks sent to you all, you know, all night long. You play a game that's, and both those games, by the way, are very high odds games.
Right.
Right. And they're cooperative and they're fun and they're a shared experience. And, you know, everybody, you know, the dealer's rooting for everybody for the table. The dealer wants to lose. The players all want the dealer to lose. Everybody's on the same team. I love that part of it.
PyGow is my game. Like, I'm so glad there is a fellow PyGower out there, because that, like, what I love about it too, I remember the first time I ever learned how to play it, I sat at the same table for 4 hours drinking White Russians, and when I left after 4 hours, I was up $10, I gave it to the dealer and walked away. It was like the best.
How about that?
it was just such a fun experience, and you never really win big or lose big in it. It's just,
yeah,
it's a fun social game, and it feels very relaxed. I don't feel any stress. Like, sometimes you're playing other games, you feel a little stress, and it's like none at all. You know, like blackjack, it's like you got to worry about if you're sitting on the end and somebody's worried you're going to hit wrong or take a card wrong or whatever. And, you know, it's like PyGow, nope, you just sit there and enjoy yourself.
So let me tell you this crazy PyGow story that happened to me in Las Vegas 20 years ago at the Golden Nugget. I'm staying there, and it's, I've been playing tons of PyGow with my friend Phil, and Phil and I, would play deep into the night, and we got to know the dealers pretty well by the end of that. 'Cause again, social game, chatting, lots of downtime, chatting mm-hmm. with the dealers and stuff. You know, you learn their names, their histories, where else they worked, what, you know, you got all kinds of stuff down. And on our last night, we've got this dealer who we've become really, really friendly with. And he says to us in a hushed tone, and it's me and Phil and him. That's it. And he says, "Don't touch your cards when I deal them." Okay. So, deals out. Back then, they had the dice. They had the dice in the metal shaker. Did you ever see that in PyGow in the old days?
I played that.
The dice. Mm-hmm. So it dice with the metal shaker does that thing. Deals out our cards, and so we don't touch our cards. With the cards are face down in front of us, right? So they're, imagine cards. You've got your stack of cards face down in front of us.
Yep.
He, face down, sets our hands. The five cards and the two cards.
Uh-huh.
He separated the cards face down. And to this day, I have no idea how. And he said it right. He said it right.
That's what I was going to ask. It's one thing to do that. It's another thing to do it right.
Yes. How did you do that? It's one of the we have no idea to this day how that happened, how he did it. It was wizardry, but that is a true story that happened. And that was wild.
That is crazy. Really, really, I have wild. No, unless the cards were marked somehow, I'd have no idea how you would even begin to do that.
I don't either. And how do you get marked cards inside a casino and whatever? I don't know how that could possibly be. And, you know, there was no advantage for him to do it, but
right.
He can do it.
Well, that's awesome. Well, hopefully we'll see you out at some PyGow tables in Vegas in March. So
yeah, wouldn't that be fun? Let's get a PyGow table going.
Absolutely. Ryan Donaldson, or I think it was it. No, Zach Halverson wanted to know, learn how to play that. So, I told him
he did.
I told him I would offer to teach him. So, so that, yeah, we gotta.
You might want to set aside a few hours for that.
All right. Well, hey, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast tonight, Charge. We're big fans of everything you do. In fact, I'm even a big fan of the 15-minute segment you did on Dolly Parton when you were filling in for Charge or for PA a while back. So
that's probably my favorite segment of the last year of filling in. That was
great.
That was a ton of fun. I had so much fun with that segment, and I got so much feedback. You never know. The funny thing is, it's almost always not the sports subjects. As much as people bitch and moan when you don't do sports, that's the stuff that you get all the feedback on. When I did the Halloween candy draft last week on Halloween Day, I got 100 tweets, I got 100 emails at the inbox. And then when we spend two segments on Kirk Cousins and why it was such a great signing, crickets.
Yeah, yep.
You know. You know, we got callers, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same. So
that's That's what I said about the Fantasy Charts Challenge too. It's like that generates the passion from the Rubes. It's like, you know, hockey and Sauce can bet $200 on, you know, a line and a couple people will be interested, but man, you start talking about somebody buying out of the Charts Challenge and people go nuts.
They're riled up. That's right. So, yeah, exactly. So. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much, Charge, and we'll see you on Fanball.
Sounds good. Thanks, Chuck, Dave. I appreciate all the obvious research you put into this and the thoughtfulness of your questions.
Thank you for listening to the Bets and Quotes podcast. Be sure to give us a rating on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you think we're hideous, please lie.
Coming back.